HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. This is a Medical Monday, and we're talking about breast cancer, taking a close and personal look at treatments and trying to give you the best information you need to make the best decisions about your health. My guests are Dr. Lori Wilson, Director of Surgery Residency here at Howard University Hospital, and Jacqueline Smith with the DC Cancer Action Partnership. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Julia, calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling, Julia. What's on your mind?
Well, I was calling to ask a question about, is it common for a breast cancer survivor to go through like a postpartum depression kind of incident after going through all the treatments and done with surgery?
That actually is common. It's difficult. You go through this very aggressive treatment oftentimes, and then at the very end, you are released and said, it's time for you to go out on your own. Make sure to follow up with us. And oftentimes, that can be the most difficult part of treatment. It's sort of separating yourself from your cancer care team, not quite knowing what survivorship is going to mean for you, adapting to your new normal. And depression definitely can be a part of that. When we look at statistics, probably about 10% of breast cancer patients can be impacted by depression, which is probably 2 to 3 times greater than the population similarly without cancer. So it definitely is something that's normal, but advocating for your improved mental health, reaching out to those that can support you, and getting help from those that particularly specialize in oncology and depression.
Julia, do you have any experience with this particular issue that you're asking about?
Yes, I'm a breast cancer survivor.
Mm-hmm.
It's been like 10 months.
Okay.
And then I lost my dad right afterwards. Mm-hmm.
So what are you doing to address your feelings of depression? Are you speaking to someone?
Well, I have a support system that I use, and of course I go to church and I pray all the time.
Jacqueline may have some suggestions too, because obviously spiritual support is critical, and you do mention a support network, but sometimes we may need to dig a little bit deeper to make sure that we don't sink any deeper. Jacqueline, can you talk to me about that?
Sure. And Julia, I had the very same experience. I lost my father very shortly after I finished treatment. So I understand. And also some of the treatments we have can cause depression. So that's something to also keep in mind. But yes, you want to make sure that you're connected with your support group. And if you are a spiritual person, to make sure you reach out and always let someone know when you're feeling overwhelmed, because you have to understand that you're entitled to feel that way. And I think that's one of the biggest issues, that you feel, okay, this is done. And you might look as if you're fine, because that's another thing that people say, well, but you look healthy, you look fine. But there are a lot of issues. And just like Dr. Wilson said, finding your new normal, and that new normal might change from day to day. So making sure that you understand you can take some time to yourself and just look in the mirror and be thankful that you're still here, and know that you have a purpose. And as long as your eyes open in the morning, that it can only get better. And that's one of the things that I try to tell myself, because there are always changes, and you're trying to, you know, you might, from surgery and treatment, your body changes, and so your sense of self changes also. And it's hard to embrace all of that, but it can only get better.
And
thank you.
And the only thing I wanted to add is making sure that you explore potential support groups. Women who have very similar experiences to yourself can sometimes understand what you're going through and help to sort of get you through because they can lead you through.
Julia, I wanted to say I'm going to have my producer get your phone number because there is a resource also that I would like to share with you. So if you'll allow our producer to get your phone number, and I will call you after the program and share a resource with you to help you also deal with some of the grief that you're going through, if you don't mind. Okay.
Okay,
so thank you so much. I mean, if we can have our producer pick up the line with Julie and grab her number, and I'll make sure that I reach out to you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Can we talk a little bit about the symptoms, Dr. Wilson? How your symptoms and also generally, and I'm just really so happy that I can sit here and talk to you and get that first-hand account, not only about your situation, but then you can also obviously provide that broader perspective for situations that may not be like yours.
Let's start with the most common. The most common patient doesn't have any symptoms. That's where we want to really find breast cancer. Usually it's found after screening. Screening's done because we want to evaluate the breast and see if there's anything that's new or different. And so the screening really oftentimes is where women get introduced into the system. I actually breastfed my son for a little over a year after the recommendations that are given for optimal risk reduction. And what I found is when I stopped breastfeeding, my breast didn't go down. One of my breasts didn't go down. And so for me, that was, you know, this is what I do. And so it was a telltale sign that there was something going on. And so there was nothing else other than the size that was different. When I went to have my evaluation, of course, they want to look at both sides. And when I had that done, a breast cancer was found on the other side as well. That one was completely without symptom.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lynn, calling from Silver Spring. Thanks for calling, Lynn. What's on your mind?
Yes, I wanted to ask about the importance of stress. I notice a lot of women who have demanding professional careers, in some instances, are prone to come down with breast cancer. So the elimination of stress, such as relaxing more, staying calm and comfortable, not getting angry, taking massages, lymphatic drainage massage, as well as drinking tea, because in some countries, those who drink tea on a daily basis and have a ritual around that have less breast cancer. So what are the comments and thoughts of the experts there this evening on those areas?
I think you bring up a really very good point. We know that stress does impact so many illnesses. We are not able to quantify yet, though, how stress directly relates to the cause of breast cancer. What I do believe is that it is about healthy lifestyles. We know that coping with stress is helpful in not only our chronic diseases like high blood pressure and other illnesses such as that. But we also know that things such as exercise, mm-hmm. making sure that you have an outlet for your stress, whether it's talking, having fun, having a hobby, doing that thing that is going to bring you to your normal sort of zen. also meditation, spending time with friends. You have to find that thing that is going to help you reduce your stress, whether it's looking up that funny joke, you know, for the day. There has to be something that is going to help you move through and away from your stress.
Jacqueline, same issue, dealing with stress, particularly for moving through the end of the cancer and coming out on the other side.
I agree. It's nice if you can, if you have your resources that you know that are out there. And that's one of the things on our survivorship care team. We've tried to create a resource guide for the district and surrounding areas so that people who are experiencing cancer as well as caregivers, because that's another very, very important aspect of survivorship is who's your care team, who's there for you, and caregivers also get overwhelmed. And so we've created a resource guide that can help you with financial issues, trying to coordinate your care. There's a lot of organizations that offer alternative treatment. So when we think about yoga and meditation, and for those of us who might not be able to afford that, there are organizations that offer this for free for survivors and caregivers. And so that's a very good thing. And that's also, you can find the resource guide on our website as well.
And one of the things that while you're going through your treatment, oftentimes, especially for breast programs, there's a patient navigator and that, or patient coordinator, and that person can absolutely help you find those resources to help with your dealing with stress.
Okay. Lynn, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's talk a little bit about treatments. We've on this program had a lot of discussions about the various and sundry treatments from, as it relates to cancer, from chemotherapy, radiation. We even had a discussion last week about proton treatments. What are the various treatments for breast cancer, and does it vary from stage to stage?
It does vary from stage to stage. It varies from individual to individual. Everyone's breast cancer is different. You sort of come with different features, and each breast cancer should be tailored to how it presents. But there are some basic categories of treatments that we think of. We think of locally treating the breast with surgery. That's removing the breast cancer. We think of locally treating the breast with radiation. That's if the breast is kept intact or there's a large breast cancer and you want to reduce the risk of it coming back. So giving it either to the breast or to the chest wall. We also know chemotherapy. Chemotherapy, there are definite rules that go along with, or recommendations that go along with, and protocols that go along with giving chemotherapy.
Such as?
For instance, different types of breast cancers, for instance, triple negative breast cancers, have fewer targets to treat. And so oftentimes chemotherapy is the best way in treating those breast cancers, depending upon the size, the presentation, if there's any evidence of spread. Breast cancers, there's a special test for breast cancers that are found to have estrogen receptors, progesterone receptors.
Which are?
They are protein markers. I almost think about it like locking a key. So the ovaries and the body will produce hormones called estrogen and progesterone. They oftentimes can find their ways to these proteins that are found on breast cancers. And when they do find them, they can make those breast cancer cells grow more rapidly or more aggressively. What we know is that there are medications that can block that, and that's medications that our hormonal therapy that will block it from being able to grow and to come back. And then we also have other targeted therapies that will help. So there are many different types of medications, chemotherapy, hormonal therapy, and targeted therapy that can reduce the risk of it coming back. And that's usually treating the entire body plus the breast cancer, as well as oftentimes the lymph nodes.
I need to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about quality of life for survivors and what happens after remission. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. It's a Medical Monday. We're talking about breast cancer awareness. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, everybody. I'm Hoda Kotb.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion on this Medical Monday about breast cancer awareness with Dr. Lori Wilson, Director of Surgery Residency at Howard University Hospital, and Jacqueline Smith with the DC Cancer Action Partnership. Dr. Wilson, talk to me a little bit about some quality of life issues. You mentioned your son, you mentioned your wonderful husband helping you through this process. What kind of conversations, if you can take us inside that conversation you had with your husband, you know, when you told him that, you know, not only about the breast cancer, but, you know, it's likely that you may have a mastectomy, and, you know, how did that go?
For me, I'm lucky that I've known my husband a very long time. When I was originally diagnosed, I was diagnosed, and it was a Friday afternoon, and I remember getting the information, and my husband wasn't with me, so I called him, and he said, "I'll be right home." And so that sort of started our journey together. He's my rock, you know. He's the person I depend on and the person that I can share with. But I think that when you are going through it, oftentimes you're almost in a fog, you know. For me, it was being able to let go and become a patient and be able to experience each aspect of my care. When I found out that I needed to have a mastectomy, we saw both a cancer surgeon, about the mastectomy, but also a plastic surgeon. And I ended up having to have radiation. So I had my initial reconstruction done with a tissue expander, which meant that they would expand over time. And then I had my radiation. However, I had a bit of a setback after my radiation in that I had a major chest wall infection, was hospitalized, and I lost my reconstruction. So I'm actually had to go through the process of relearning how to like my body again. Mm-hmm. And my husband was instrumental in that.
What advice would you give to husbands, boyfriends, partners, significant others when the woman in their life is beginning to move through this process? Because as I said earlier, this obviously is a major situation for the patient, but for the support group, for the families, for children, as well as mothers and fathers, it can be difficult for them.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that there are tremendous resources out there, and it is oftentimes, I want to speak as a patient. Mm-hmm. What I would say is just being present, not having to have all the answers, not having to take care of everything, but just being present. Because and being the patient, allowing someone to care for you when oftentimes you're the caregiver for most. That was difficult for me.
Yeah, doctors are the worst patients.
Well,
that's what they say.
And also because...
she's indignant. Now she's indignant.
Yeah, being the caregiver as well, oftentimes letting go and letting someone else take care and sort of take care of you is oftentimes difficult for many. And so just being present was a wonderful thing for my husband. And then making sure that you know that there are organizations out there that support men in their journey, give them an opportunity to discuss things that they may not be able to discuss with the person who's diagnosed. And that's for all caregivers. And then specifically for children, I think it is paramount that kids be dealt, that we understand that kids are part of the process as well. And helping them get through this process oftentimes will help them understand what's going on and be a little less anxious, a little less out of the loop. And so I think it really is important that you take those resources and really try to use them to improve everyone, not just the person with the diagnosis of cancer.
Jacqueline, you spoke earlier about advocating for yourself. What did you mean by that?
When I mentioned advocating for yourself, I meant making sure that if you're told you're too young, don't worry about that, that you seek a second opinion or that you keep pushing forward if you feel there's something wrong. Across the board, people of color seem to present with later stage disease, so later stage cancers, meaning that you have a worse prognosis. And part of with all of the advances we've made in oncology today, if you present with maybe stage one versus stage three, you'll have a better quality of life, you'll have less invasive treatments by and large. So if you show up or you feel a lump in your breast or something is off and you know that, make sure you go to the physician and have a conversation. And if you feel that your concerns aren't being addressed there, then seek a second opinion. Because I think that's where people fail themselves a lot of the times, is that they don't want to be a burden. They don't want to be seen as a nuisance patient. And I mean, that's what happened to me. I went for 2 years going to the doctor and they kept saying, there's nothing. Oh, you're young. Don't worry about it. And I ended up with stage three cancer and was told I wouldn't live 5 years. And so if I had listened and not kept pursuing, even though it took 2 years, I probably wouldn't be alive today. And so I always encourage everyone to make sure that you keep pushing and pursuing until you feel comfortable.
How old are you now? How old are you now?
In my 30s.
Let me say this about that. Vanity when it comes to cancer and health is not an issue on this program. How old are you,
Jacqueline? I'm 38 years old.
Thank you, Jacqueline. Thank you so much. Boy, oh boy. Help me out here, doctor. Well, you look like you're 32.
Thank you.
What have you learned after going through this process? You know, when you kind of look back and let us hope that you continue to only look back and that it is no longer a full part of your life. What is the biggest lesson for you?
My biggest lesson was learning to advocate for myself. Mm-hmm. I was 22 years old when I was initially diagnosed with stage three cancer. And it was very difficult. All of my friends we just graduated undergrad. Everyone's planning for their futures. And I'm sitting in there with a physician who almost didn't want to look at me because even he was surprised that I had advanced stage cancer. And he told me, no, grad school is probably not going to happen. This treatment that you have to have is very toxic and you might have to restructure what you think your future will be. And so I learned to always ask questions, to research for myself. And I also learned that I'm a lot stronger than I thought I was. Mm-hmm. So there, you know, I've become more resilient And that's why, like when we were speaking earlier, I said if you open your eyes, then you have the promise of it getting better today. And so that's what I take with me.
Final comment from you, Dr. Wilson. What have you learned having gone through this process?
I think it helped me be more in touch with my patients, understanding what I'm asking of them, and hopefully them also understanding that when I ask them to do something, that oftentimes I've had that same experience, and so that I'm open to understanding where they're coming from, and hopefully has made me a bit more compassionate and a bit more empathetic.
Mm-hmm. And what would be your final, you know, comments to women that are worried, that may not want to investigate, may not want to move forward to find out whether or not this is or is not a cancer issue for them? How do you encourage them, Dr. Wilson, to take the steps that they need to make sure that their health is the best that it can be?
You know, that's such a complex question. I always recommend that screening is important. I understand that all of the things that we've set out, but if you can't make that first step, you can't get to the other side. And so reaching out when you don't feel that you can do it yourself and finding that sister friend or finding that person who can help you and guide you through. There are so many people out there, so many wonderful organizations, especially in the DMV, that are willing to work with and advocate and really navigate this process with you so you're never alone.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good way to end this conversation. Certainly, for those of you that may be going through this, hopefully you have that support and that you are never alone. And for those of you who perhaps need support, you can find support through the DC Cancer Action Partnership. And it's dccanceractionpartnership.com. No, then what is it?
It's DC Cancer Action. Dot org.
I knew there was going to be a dot org in there. Let's say that one more time, and yes. I'll make sure that I post that correctly also. What
DC
is it?
DCCancerAction.org. So we DC, have resource guides and other helpful tips.
DCCancerAction.org. It will be on our website, as always, tonight after 8:30. Ladies, Dr. Wilson and Jacqueline Smith, thank you both so much. I really appreciate you coming in.
Thank you for having us.
That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, October 10th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me at hfisher@whur.com, on Facebook at Harold Fisher, WHUR, or Twitter at hfisherwhur. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.